In a world of EMS podcasters, EMS Office Hours is the only live podcast bringing you the latest topics and opinions in EMS. Turn down your scanner and turn up your speakers as we join Jim Hoffman and Josh Knapp on their latest EMS podcasting journey.
This is Jim Hoffman for EMS Office Hours.
And this is Josh Knapp.
Josh, how are you?
I'm doing good, man.
I guess I'm trying to see if Dave...
Mr. Brenner.
Brenner is going to join us.
He is online right now. I saw him pop up. You probably saw the same.
Yeah, I'm going to try to drag him on over to the conversation.
Awesome.
Let's see if we get him on here.
Well, his laptop is acting up today.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, what else is new?
Yeah, right. Hey, Dave.
How we doing?
I was just texting you. I will erase the message now.
Okay.
The magic of communication.
Absolutely.
That.
Now, is that you in the background that's playing, or is that like one of my browsers? Is that Blog Talk that's being obnoxious?
It must be Blog, not me. I don't hear anything.
I don't have anything going.
All right. No problem. It's kind of weird.
Yeah.
All right.
It is weird. Screwy, even. Kooky.
Hey, but strange. That's EMS. We deal with screwy, kooky, strange.
I suppose. So, how are you guys doing?
I'm much better, thank you.
Oh.
Are you hydrated?
I am. I am very well hydrated, thank you.
I
went for a long walk today and stayed hydrated during the walk. It wasn't dehydration that got me. I mean, it was must have been some sort of virus or bug. I mean, it's one of those things that you leave the ED and the doc doesn't know what it is, but he thinks you're well enough to go home and hopes you don't die en route.
Right.
What, do you guys have a plane passing through your living room?
I have the windows open. That could be just New York air traffic.
Josh likes keeping his windows open and the fan going.
Yeah, because, you know, otherwise I'll get dehydrated.
Yeah, whatever. Well, I want to remind people, of course, if you are listening live, you can feel free to give us a call and join us in the conversation. Its number is 877-217-3924, and of course you can follow us on Twitter as well. It's EMS Safe on Twitter, and we'd love to go ahead and get your comments and feedback as we discuss the hot trending topics, I don't know.
Something like that.
Otherwise known as shit on my mind.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know.
You know what's bothering me this week?
Yeah, exactly. I had a couple of things I put in the show notes, and I want to get through one thing with you guys first, just to get your opinion on it. That the summertime is upon us. You know, we get a summertime, you know, we tend to be one of those parts of the year we get sent to a lot of drowning calls or the near drowning calls, and I'm wondering on your take on this. You know, this is something that's always sort of been this confusing way to treat those patients. Do you treat them as a trauma? Do you treat them as a medical? You know, and I figure since I had the two of you with me, we'll get your take on it as well.
Hmm.
We'll kind of start off with that a little bit.
I'll chime in. I think it's a matter of how the patient's presenting. You know, I mean, obvious life threats first.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you'll have people who argue that, you know, well, they're drowning, you don't know why. Did they hit their head on the bottom of the pool or something, or did they hit their head on the side of a boat and that's why they were drowning? Did they drown because they couldn't swim? You know, it's sort of this thing where you look at a protocol, let's say, for a drowning victim, and most of them lean towards the treating it as a medical call, but protecting the spine as you're doing so.
Right.
Right? That's usually how they kind of, you know, lean towards it. You know, they go with the, you know, we'll protect the spine, but, you know, treat it as a medical.
Isn't that how we do everything?
Yeah, I guess it is, Dave. I guess you're right with that. I mean, we're supposed to be right checking our patients and seeing, you know, the MOI, mechanism of injury. When you get on scene, everybody verbalizes the shit out of that when they do their patient assessment, you know.
Testing.
But there is some truth in that, right, where you are actually assessing for potential injuries that are related to what's going on with the patient, you know. Even with the patients, you know, we get those scenarios where the patient, and I mean, I've actually had this happen where you get to, let's say, a car accident and the patient's unconscious, but were they unconscious because of the accident, or did they go unconscious and then have the accident? Type thing, you know what I mean?
Sure.
And then I guess it's the same type of thing when it comes to the journal. You've got to do the entire assessment of the patient and see where, you know, where it's coming from and things like that, and then treat the patient according, you know, to what your findings are, what bystanders tell you, and things like that. I guess I'm asking the drowning thing because, you know, the element of giving ACLS-type medications for a traumatic arrest, you know,
right,
rather than it being a medical arrest. And there's always been that confusion with that, where you'll get people who will say, well, it's a traumatic arrest, a drowning, so you're not going to give ACLS, you're not going to give medications for that. It's just going to be CPR and airway management, things like that, and taking to the hospital. You know,
so, Jim, as you can imagine, I probably have an opinion.
Yeah, you know, yeah. I'm sure you do.
I do.
This is why I'm asking the question.
Yeah, yeah. Open the doorway for that opinion, but, you know.
But Josh, if you want to go first, you can.
No. Actually, I was actually stepping back to hear your opinion, Dave.
Wow.
Because I thought it would be
I'm
going to
give
well,
a little.
Well, you're on Long Island. There is water where you are.
Yeah, you know, but more than that, I was an ocean lifeguard, chief lifeguard at Rockaway Beach for 24 summers. I have seen more dead kids than you would ever want to see. Who drowned on the beach. Am I still here?
Yeah.
Okay, good. It got really quiet. That's good.
But Josh closes the window, then he opens the window, he closes the window, he opens, okay. He's open and closes. So
I'm actually trying to mute my microphone.
Oh, I thought it was when he was yawning.
Ah.
Okay, so I've seen a lot of kids drown and die, and those are different because, and I say kids because the modus operandum for almost all the kids that I pulled out of the water, they didn't drown in front of me. You know, they drowned on the beach. I'm very happy to say that none of them drowned in front of me, but I did pull them out, often in areas to my east and west. And they drowned because they drowned. They didn't. Most of them didn't drown due to trauma. They drowned because they drowned. And mostly, there was a lot of SVE, swimming while intoxicated, swimming in places where they would not be swimming, and they drowned.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, when we took them out of the water, we weren't terribly concerned about spinal immobilization and never heard that our failure to spinal immobilize them was ever an issue. They drowned in water that was deep. Surfers are another story. You know, surfers can be smashed to the bottom. People who drown in pools, especially unwitnessed drowning in pools,
mm-hmm.
worry about that. But more important than all of that, since you're asking the ACLS question, is that none of the drugs we give in cardiac arrest are shown medically, are shown to do anything. None of them. Now, if you read the ACLS stuff, they say, well, we'll give an epi because we don't know what else to do.
Right. I know that. I'm just...
The old that can't hurt, right?
My question, I guess, is when you're talking about it,
From just a provider perspective, where, you know, whether the drugs do something or not, you know, a protocol or a medical director is expecting you to give those drugs for a cardiac arrest call, right?
Now.
So my question
I
is...
I think it's going to change very soon.
My question, I guess, is when you as a provider have that situation of a drowning, you know, do you have a defense by not giving the medications based on the fact that it's not a medical arrest?
Doesn't that sort of put us back under that same old argument of, well, it's in the protocol, and the protocols are guidelines, which suggests that mm-hmm. you can actually think independently and choose not to follow the protocol, you
yeah,
know?
But most medical directors, reality, you know, you try doing that and...
In reality, if you don't do that, if you don't follow the protocol under almost every circumstance, you will be, I didn't want to use this word. I can't think of a better one. But you'll be punished for it, reprimanded,
I would
remediated.
Say
you know,
most of the drownings are anoxic deaths.
Mm-hmm.
They drowned. They drowned. Most of them didn't die, and those are horrible deaths. Those are not easily reversible deaths, whether they were traumatic or not. They're not easily reversible. I mean, you know, certainly if regular CPR and good ventilation doesn't do it, all the other stuff we give...
It's not going to matter anyway. Yeah, based on the science and stuff, I guess what I'm trying to get at is science aside, which, you know...
all science aside.
The shit that we do isn't based on that. It's based on because we've done it and because it's what a doctor wants us to do or because it's something to do and, you know, that whole thing going on.
The old look busy?
Yeah, you know, which I don't agree with. You know, I agree with the fact of not doing things, like you're saying, because they don't work or there's no proof that they work, and I'd rather, you know, not do it. Just, you know, then do it just because somebody, you know, it's been being done for 1,000 years. But, you know, my thing is when you're the provider themselves, you're the provider, you're the one that's got to do the paperwork, you're the one that's got to treat the patient, you're the one that has to give the report when you get to the hospital, where do you fall under that? Yeah, you can go ahead and not do it and sit there and argue with a medical director or whatever that the drugs don't do anything, and, you know, the American Heart Association's, you know, issue this, volume that, page whatever says that, you know, that it's, you know, it doesn't do anything for you when, like they said, when you've got the kid you're pulling out of the water. And you have to make the decision then on how you're going to start treating, you know, the patient. And of course, you're going to treat them with, like you said, Dave, you're going to do the good compressions and get a, you know, secure an airway of some type, you know.
So if you believe it's a hypoxic death, you know, that's one of the things under the reversible causes.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we would do everything. My response would be you do everything that is reasonable to do hypoxic death.
But you had a statement from the very get-go, Dave, that hypoxic deaths are the hardest to reverse.
Yeah, except for the real fast ones on kids, if you get there right away.
And that, on kids, because their reserves are much lower than adults and all the other, you know, physiological reasons. But... you know, just that fact, and if you give it your, you know, and you know, we all have seen good CPR and not so good CPR, and you're there, you're witnessing, everybody's taking their turns, they're doing fantastic CPR, you're working the kid up, and you're not, or the adult, and you're not getting anything for 15, 20 minutes,
do you really think that, and I'm not saying to you, this is sort of that open-ended rhetorical question, do you really think that adding chemistry to the equation is going to change the outcome?
Well, I don't think there's any evidence that it is.
I think there's actually maybe even evidence to the contrary, that there isn't.
Unless you have a reversible cause of death.
But we just said that hypoxia is a reversible cause of death.
It is. I mean, the best thing you can do with that is give them oxygen, get rid of carbon dioxide. Maybe there's some value in bicarb. But I think your best thing is getting the circulation going, getting oxygen on, getting carbon dioxide out. And if nothing happens in, what'd you say, 20 minutes?
Yeah.
And your end tidal CO2 is low, they are probably
dead. Or unchanged.
I mean, how long are they dead?
That's always
till they're warm and dead, right?
Yes. And there is that. There is that aspect.
You know, when we talk about drowning, that's another aspect of the drowning calls, too. You know, there's that sort of that end of it, you know. So, I don't know. I just wanted to put the question out there because this is something that I've had people ask me, you know, directly, like, you know, that they feel confused of the fact of they have a drowning patient. You know, do they work? Yes, they're going to do CPR. Yes, they're going to manage the airway. Yes, they're probably going to start it in an IV, things like that. But, you know, do they give medication because the trauma is unknown? You know, you don't know if they hit their head or why that they drowned, or, you know what I'm saying? So that question is sort of out there. And from what I've seen is most protocols direct you to treat it as if it's a medical arrest, but you are doing other things at the same time. Because of the unknown factor, like putting them on a board and the collar and things like that, because of that unknown element of a potential traumatic, you know, cause for the drowning.
So you're talking, maybe you're starting to point towards the idea of dressing the corpse? You know, you're on your way in, everything that you've done can be done, they're not going to pronounce in the field, so you keep CPR up and you transport. And while you're en route to transport, because it's a drowning, even if it was a deep water drowning or non, quote unquote, traumatic event, you know, traumatic drowning, you're going to dress them up on a longboard because that's what the protocol says.
Well, I mean, I think most of the time they're going to already be on the board anyway, because just for movement purposes and transport purposes, they're probably already going to be on a board to begin with. I guess the main thing that I'm just talking about is to, you know, the mentality of following that protocol as a medical.
You know what I think, Jim? I think that when we look at these people who have trauma in drowning, the trauma, if anything, helped them drown, but they died from drowning.
Right.
They may also have head trauma, and if you don't take care of their breathing and pulse, they're not going to survive the head trauma. It's unlikely that whatever happened to them, where they hit their head when they dove into the pool, I don't know that caused them to die right away. It knocked them out and they drowned.
Right.
So I think the reasonable approach in the short term is exactly what you said. Treat it as a medical death with possible reversible causes, while stabilizing the spine. And they get to the hospital, and, you know, if that's a good guideline, if that's what they're going to do, they're going to do with their head CT.
And actually, I talked to a doctor about it.
But they're going to do that only after they get back, you know, basic life functions.
But I talked to a doctor, Dave, and gave him the same answer that, you know, yes, they might have sustained an injury at some point, whether it was before they hit the water or after they hit the water, but most likely that injury is not what caused them to die.
Right, as opposed to the motor vehicle crashes where they're dead because they bled out internally or their head was crushed.
Or whatever injury that they had caused them to drown, which is why they died.
You know, it brings to mind, as long as we are occasionally allowed to go stream of consciousness, so I'm going to go there. I had an episode about 25 years ago, I was an ocean lifeguard in the summer, living where I live, on ambulance duty. And in the middle of the night, that, you know, I go to sleep. I get it. My being on duty is I'm home asleep until they need me. And in the middle of the night, I get awakened to what I thought was a fusion between a regular alarm and a lifeguarding dream, which I always had and continue to have. They're annoying. I haven't been a lifeguard since 1992, but I still have lifeguarding dreams. And I wake up and I'm disappointed that I'm no longer a lifeguard. But having said that, so it was a person who drowned around the corner from me. So I get there and there's an 18-year-old on a patio with it's like 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, a whole bunch of other 18 to 22-year-olds. Most of them were not as think as you drunk I am.
Mm.
And he's soaking wet in his tidy whities. He's like 6'4". And he's soaking wet. And I said, what happened? They said, he drowned. I said, well, where did he drown? And they point about 50 feet away from the house. There's a pool in the backyard that's about 4 and a half feet deep. You know, it's an above ground pool.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, I made a critical mistake. I said, how did he drown? Did he have a seizure in there? Because I just couldn't picture this guy drowning. And they said to me, yeah. And I said, well, how did he get here? They said, we brought him here. Okay. So I did what we always do. I mean, exactly what you said. I stabilized the head, did a jaw thrust maneuver, started ventilating him. And at one point, he did a rest. But he came back, but he was in respiratory arrest. And the story finally came out. When we finally put it all together, this is what happened. He had gone swimming. Oh, and the 18-year-old who lived in the house and the parents were away for the weekend had a keg party. Because never go away with an 18-year-old in your house. That's just crazy.
Yeah.
And this guy went swimming while he was drunk, and that's not what happened. He just felt really empowered. He climbed up onto the roof of the Colonial, and
right.
he was gonna dive from the roof into the pool, which, by the way, was only 50 feet away from the house.
Mm.
Only 50 feet away
right.
from the house.
Yeah. But
and
get in a running jump, he could do it.
He only missed by about 35 feet.
Yeah,
but right. he did dive straight into the cement patio. Destroying everything from the neck up and ruining everything from the neck down as well.
Right.
And you know, it turns out I did the right thing. It was not something that anybody was going to survive. It was a horrifying event when we finally figured it all out. And they did figure it all out.
Did you get all wet?
He was in the pool first.
Ah.
Climbed up onto the pool, onto the roof to dive into the pool in the house. And it was horrifying. It's always horrifying. He's a kid.
And
you know?
Keep in mind that, you know, as far as you know, the toxins on board were alcohol-based. But,
right.
You
right.
know, what sort of grabs somebody and takes on that type of non-judgmental risk behavior?
He might have been a risk taker before that. And
right.
There might have been other things, and I can't speak to
or
that.
Or maybe he thought he could fly.
Perhaps.
Well, he could fly for about...
Very briefly.
For 3 seconds.
Yeah, but it's terrible. It's still terrible.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Listen, that's the thing with, I don't know, with pools and drinking. It's always a risk with that. I mean, my brother was out, when he was younger with friends, and they were... out drinking at a hotel, and the pool in the back of the hotel, and they were having a good time, and the one friend hit his head when he went into the pool. You know, he was drunk. They helped him get out of the pool, laid him next to the pool. You know, he passed out next to the pool, and they went into the hotel rooms that night, woke up the next morning, he's still laying next to the pool.
That's not good.
And
that didn't end well.
Turned out when he hit his head in the pool, he, you know, fractured his spine and was paralyzed.
Ugh.
So, you know, but he didn't know it because he was passed out. They didn't know it because they were drunk and figured they did the right thing by taking him out of the pool and getting away from the pool and, you know.
Right.
That was a good first step.
You know, it's almost like when people get into some sort of accident in front of other people, and you know, the bystanders sort of respond, it seems like they're always acting with the best of possibilities. And when we come onto the scene, we're always looking for the worst of possibilities. You know, so they think, yeah, he's drunk, he probably passed out, maybe he knocked himself out. We'll put him by the pool, he'll sleep it off, he'll be fine. You know, had we been called, we would have been looking for the mechanism of injury and, you know, what was the events that led up to the injury, how he was after the injury, and then, you know, immediate transport for a higher level of care.
Yeah, we always presume not being able to wake up is bad.
Yeah.
Isn't that what Narcan was invented for?
Doesn't just work on everything.
Yeah, no, I know. I know, I was just...
They make it seem like it does, though, now.
Yeah, you know, that's really what I was referencing. It's this whole new... You know,
everybody gives Narcan.
It's a miracle drug.
It's a miracle drug.
Everybody should carry it.
I would like to know, 15, 20 years from today, if everybody carrying Narcan ever has any significant effect, I'm hoping it does on people so that they don't continue to do it. How many times have you done repeated trips of people on Narcan? Same person, same,
right.
You know. I was here last Friday, wasn't I?
Yeah.
Listen, if you work anywhere that has a treatment clinic, like a methadone clinic, and it's in your response area, you know where the clinic is, you know what times and hours it operates, you know when, you know.
Sure. Oh, listen, you know, and I worked, you know, I used to work, when I worked in at the one hospital I worked for, the most popular call was CHF patients. And then I worked in Manhattan, I worked for Cabrini, and the most popular call was heroin overdoses.
Yep.
You know, you get to know where you're going, you know. I mean, every place has to have, every area, I think, has its own little, you know, areas of that type of activity, and you kind of know it. But some places where you work, it's a much higher concentration of that. Just like there's a much higher concentration in some places of, you know, gunshot wounds and things like that.
Or asthma, or any
right,
of
or asthma, right. Exactly. Oh, yeah, I used to always say that with the asthma stuff, certain, you know...
The Bronx, man, the Bronx.
I used to say they should just fly a helicopter over and just nebulize the entire neighborhood. And
like a crop duster.
Right, yeah, you tell everybody to go outside and take some deep breaths. We're going to come by with... the nightly nebulizer treatment. And everybody just sits outside and they crop dust the entire little area with albuterol.
Mm-hmm.
That'd probably work.
I'm sure the albuterol folks would like it.
Oh, yeah. 55 gallon drum of albuterol.
Absolutely. Just squirrel, you know. That was a left hand turn and then another left hand turn.
Well, you brought the Narcan up.
Well, you know, I mean, there was another article in the Times recently about the Staten Island cops and how they're getting it, and what are they getting, blah blah blah. But. So was this a job recently, or somebody emailed you in? I mean, what triggered this near drowning, treated like a trauma, treated like a medical?
Just talking about it, going over protocols and seeing it, and then somebody kind of questioning, you know, isn't this really a trauma? Why would there be drugs in the protocol for it, you know, type thing?
You know, and... One of the things when you were talking about it, I sort of felt that what we have is, it seems to me, and, you know, you and Dave come from different perspectives than I do, but it seems to me that there's a breakdown in the communication loop. You know, communication by its nature in an organization is usually bidirectional. there's, you know, good communication involves feedback. And it seems to me that we as a, you know, a responding body, you know, the thing of EMS, are almost in that situation where communication generally just comes in one direction.
Well, that's I'm glad you kind of brought that up, Josh.
Okay, so that's some pretty good information there for this week's episode on the drownings and all. next week, we won't be live, but we're going to have the second part of this episode where we talk about EMS crew utilization and times in the ERs and what's expected of us versus what sort of the reality of what we face every day in the field is when it comes to turning around out of the emergency room. So join us next week for that. And until that time, as always, Jim Hoffman for EMS Office Hours. Stay safe and be sure to send me any comments, concerns, questions.